Missed the latest edition of the David Glenn Show? Get caught up at accsports.com/David Glenn.
The language of the notice of allegations matters a lot. At a cocktail party discussion of the UNC scandal related to those AFAM classes that many took, athletes and non-athletes, and got suspiciously high grades in, okay? At the cocktail party, it is enough to say, that stinks to high heaven. How could any university, much less a top five public university in the United States, take itself seriously academically while allowing that to happen? How could it happen? It stinks to high heaven. It's outrageous. And as much as the NCAA brags about the student-athlete concept, they certainly cannot sit idly by and let something that smelly happen at a member institution, right? That's enough at the cocktail party. You've already convicted the Tar Heels. You might be screaming for an SMU-style death penalty, even if you don't really understand how the rules work and what leads to the death penalty. As bad as the new notice of allegations is, and I'll tell you about the biggest changes, you're still not going to see a death penalty. Remember, Southern Methodist had to stop playing football. That's a death penalty. And those facts were infinitely more smelly than anything I've ever seen in 30 years of covering NCAA scandals. So leave SMU out there all by itself. This one smells for different reasons and could and is now more likely to lead to severe sanctions for the Tar Heels. But you're showing your ignorance if you talk about the death penalty. That's not how that particular case worked in the past. The language matters infinitely. Like, the cocktail party conversation, not sort of irrelevant, 100% irrelevant. The language of what you're charged with in the NCAA is not only relevant, it's essential. Like, it defines whether you are likely headed toward a slap on the wrist, or it defines whether you are likely, again, we don't know for sure, even with the new NOA, more likely headed to severe sanctions, like vacated victories and loss of scholarships, and who knows, even the yanking down of championship banners. We'll see. We're not at the finish line yet. The language in the one released today is not slightly different from the language in NOA number 2 from earlier this calendar year. Three massive, they might not sound all that big a deal to you, but in the legalese of the NCAA, they matter a ton if you truly want to understand how this stuff works. I know that the cocktail party conversation cannot believe that what I am about to say was true, but to refresh your memory, it is true. In notice of allegations number 2, Darren Vaught, I read all, I wish I had a more interesting life, and I did not read all of NOA number 1, all of NOA number 2, all of NOA number 3. Counting the Marvin Austin stuff with the football program, I'm like 7 years deep into paperwork with the UNC scandals, plural. I'm not proud of the fact that I've read every page and looked at all the documents and exhibits. Not proud. Need more interesting things going on in my life. But I did read it all. Do you know how many references there were in NOA number 2, again, earlier this year, what the Tar Heels were going to be charged with? How many specific references to either football or men's basketball in the entirety of all that mountain of paperwork? How many specific references were there in the charges themselves?
Zero in the second NOA.
That is correct. Zero. Not mentioned. They weren't claiming that there weren't football and men's basketball players in those AFAM classes, but they were not listing specific allegations toward those teams. Allegations toward UNC? Yes. Toward the athletic department? Yes. Toward a couple of individuals? Yes. Toward women's basketball? Yes. Football and men's basketball? Not mentioned by name at all. One of the three big changes, biggest, I'll say, among many changes, is that football and men's basketball, once again, in the new one announced earlier this hour, are specifically listed by name. Why does that matter? Again, cocktail party can't explain this stuff. Here's how it actually works in the real world. There is no precedent in like 100 years of the NCAA for you to give a sanction to a sport, not a school, not an athletic department, not a university-wide fine, or, know, probation or other repercussions, right? But I'm penalizing you, football or men's basketball. There is no precedent for hitting a specific sport when that sport's not even mentioned in the letter. So the NCAA Committee on Infractions would have either had to given UNC a variety of sanctions that did not specifically touch men's basketball or football, or they would have had to done something they've never done before, which leaves you vulnerable to allegations of impropriety and lawsuits and bites back by UNC. Old NOA, no specific mention of football and men's basketball. One release today, they are both specifically mentioned. That is not a little deal. That is a big deal. Major takeaway number two, another change that is bad for UNC, or at the very least, potentially extremely bad for UNC. Remember the old phrases, impermissible benefits, improper benefits, extra benefits? Do you remember if they were in NOA number two as released earlier this year, Darren Vaught?
I did not read NOA number two as thoroughly as UDG, but I don't believe they were.
You are correct once again, young man. Go to the head of the class. You've been doing your homework as well. Extra benefit type phrases were not mentioned. In the one released today, they're back. Extra benefit, that phrase is back. Why does that matter? Stay with me for a minute. Again, your It Smells Bad cocktail party conversation will always leave you disappointed. You will be confused. Why does the NCAA do this but not that? I can't believe it. It smelled rotten to high heaven. Why weren't the penalties more severe? Doesn't matter your gut reaction. You must connect bylaws and language to penalties to schools and teams, right? That language is back. Extra benefit. Why does it matter practically speaking? In case you want to mix this into the next cocktail party conversation and have something more intelligent to say about a very confusing case. Extra benefit. All right, Darren, you were an athlete. You could do a lot of things wrong that would not jeopardize your eligibility, okay? There are even many examples where you cheated in a class, but it didn't end up being an athletic scandal. And as long as your school, and of course this is hypothetical, we know you'd never cheat in that class, as long as it's truly an academic issue and the school treats you, the athlete, the way they would treat others who cheated, it's not an NCAA issue. A lot of people don't even understand that. You, the baseball player, wherever, might have cheated, gotten caught, got punished by your school. It doesn't rise to the level of an NCAA issue unless there's a sports angle. Like, did some tutor only give the answers to baseball players? You know, there's got to be the sports angle. You can't – it's not enough to just have cheated, okay?
Right.
That's the difference between a university issue and an NCAA issue. With extra benefits back, that allows for them to say later, hey, if you took enough extra benefits, you were actually an ineligible player. And just like Marvin Austin and those guys took money to make them ineligible, uh-oh, if they're ineligible and they played for the Tar Heels, doesn't mean those old Carolina football teams had to vacate those victories? Answer, yes. So the question becomes, all right, if you took a different kind of extra benefit, what if that extra benefit was having people in the academic athletic tutoring department steering you to classes that resulted in suspiciously high grades for ridiculously little work? Well, the NCAA is arguing, and Carolina is arguing vehemently in return against much of this stuff. If you have the extra benefit allegation, it can, if the athletes took enough to make them ineligible, what does it open the door for? It opens the door for them to argue later at the sanctions phase. These guys or folks were ineligible. You used them while they were ineligible. You need to vacate those wins or those championships. Does it automatically mean that's the conclusion? No, it does not. But with the last NOA, when there was no extra benefit charge, it was going to be essentially impossible, unless the NCAA just flat out made up the rules as they went along at the committee phase, the infractions committee phase of the process. If you don't have that hook, oh, extra benefits made them ineligible, and you used them while they were ineligible, so that opens the door for at least the possibility of taking away wins, championships, yada, yada. Extra benefits are back in the language of the NOA. That opens the door for the possibility of way more severe sanctions than the language that was in NOA number two as released by the NCAA earlier this year. The third and other biggest change among many in the new NOA is that they have changed the timetable. This is important, and again, women's basketball is a different story. Their timetable was always about a decade or so. But the biggest allegation against UNC, the one that even under the old NOA included lack of institutional control, failure to monitor, AFAM scandal, etc., that timetable in the version earlier this year went from the fall of 2005 to the summer of 2011. So that's what, a 5 to 6 year period. Now listen closely, Darren. We will test your knowledge of UNC basketball history in the not too distant past. If the timetable of what you're charged with runs from fall 2005 to summer 2011, what does it leave out in an AFAM scandal that dated all the way, according to the Weinstein Report, in a narrower way, it dated all the way to the late 1980s, okay? And in the NOA earlier this year, the only gap, the only timetable, I should say, where the severe allegations were in play was fall 2005 to summer 2011. What does that leave out?
If I'm not mistaken, that leaves out at least one national basketball championship
for the
men, right?
How about the spring of 2005 under Roy Williams, an NCAA title? And if you really wanted to extend it, obviously it also left out the 1993 national championship under Dean Smith, right? Well, the new NOA does not go all the way back to the late 1980s, and there are reasons it has to do with the NCAA's logic and what they can prove, and they have to follow their own rules. The new timetable is fall 2002 to summer 2011. Now, I still to this day get emails and tweets about how, you know, Dean Smith's 1993 banner is coming down. And I don't even know what to say. I'm like laughing at you. You have so little knowledge of how this works that you don't know the NCAA cannot take a banner from a time period where you're not charged with anything. All right? I mean, that's pretty – I think the kindergartners can get that right. If the NCAA notice says fall of 05 to 2011 summer, well, then obviously 1993 is off the table, and spring of 2005 was also off the table. The new one announced today changes the timetable. Now it's fall 2002 to summer of 2011. That's close to a decade rather than being in the 5 or 6 year range. That matters. Why does it matter? Well, the old language, you were worried about a 5 or 6 year period. The new language, you're worried about almost a decade period. You still are not dealing with any possibility, truly zero, not 0.1%, but zero. You can't lose victories and championships from a period prior to what you're accused of wrongdoing in, okay? So again, keep everything prior to fall of 2002 off your mind. It's just literally 100% irrelevant in the eyes of the NCAA. I mean, you can make it relevant for your cocktail party to whatever degree you want. But in the eyes of the NCAA, you can't have repercussions for outside the window of what you're accused of wrongdoing in. That extension does include now the 05 banner and the 09 banner under Roy Williams. Does it mean they'll be yanked down automatically? No, it does not. Does it mean, you know, 9 straight seasons of victories will be vacated in every sport that had an athlete in those AFAM classes? No, it doesn't make anything automatic. But the important takeaway is, folks, in the earlier this year rendition of this NOA, it was going to be essentially impossible for the NCAA to go beyond the proverbial slap on the wrist. You were going to see an expensive fine, some kind of probation, and I'm sure some creative other penalties. But you were not going to see football attacked. You were not going to see men's basketball attacked. They weren't even listed by name. You were not going to see anything prior to the fall of 2005. Why? Not because you think so or I think so, but because the NCAA language said the allegations began in the fall of 2005. Now they say fall of 2002. That language matters with the timetable. That language matters specifying football and men's basketball by name. And that language matters a lot. Extra benefit disappeared. And now extra benefit is back. What does that do in the end? It puts everything back on the table. We still don't know how that meeting eventually, at some point probably in 2017, will go in front of the Committee on Infractions. It doesn't mean they have to hit the Tar Heels with every severe sanction. It just means they've allowed themselves the opportunity to do so. Under the old NOA, They would have been sued and lost if they tried to execute certain types of sanctions. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. You just can't make it up. You can't punish people based on stuff in your imagination. It's got to be there. It's got to be in the language. It's got this act violated this bylaw and led to this penalty. You got to connect the dots, even in the NCAA justice system. The bottom line is trifecta of bad news for the Tar Heels. Again, we don't know the sanctions. We don't know the end result. We might not get there for a long time. If the NCAA truly hammers in all these ways the Tar Heels, you are going to end up with, I believe, an Armageddon-style UNC against Penn State collision. Prominent public university member of that organization. You are going to end up with UNC against the NCAA because UNC believes that the NCAA is violating its own rules, violating its own procedures, has had unprecedented changes where recently the SEC commissioner, Greg Sankey, told the enforcement staff. Enforcement staff spends 18 months building a case against UNC. Greg Sankey and his committee on infractions see that work and basically say, no, we don't like this. We're overruling you. Go back to the drawing board. Charge them with more serious stuff, and then we'll revisit that serious stuff later when we get this case in front of us. The way that happened has never happened in the history of the NCAA. Never. The way this case is unfolding has never happened in the history of the NCAA. This is the fourth time that the NCAA is diving into the AFAM scandal. They did it way back in like 2011 when they were investigating the football team. They did it again with the first notice. They did it again with the second notice. And they did it again leading to this notice. First time in the history of the NCAA that organization's staff has been asked to dive into the same case four different times and now has three different notice of allegations, with the only one that matters is now the one that came out today. So UNC is building a Penn State-like lawsuit, if needed, against the NCAA later. And this is going to be one, I believe, because of today's turn, one for the history books. The bottom line with what I said earlier, and we'll come to your calls on all free-for-all Thursday topics, Grayson Allen, HB2, UNC versus the NCAA, NFL, college football, college basketball, all on our minds. The reason I say that this is the classic case that symbolizes why so many people say they hate the NCAA, if the NCAA, after what some have described as the worst case of academic fraud in history, did little or nothing or slap on the wrist, well, all of those that see it as a toothless, incompetent, holy cow, they can't even govern that, all those people come out of the woodwork. However, as with the Penn State case and the Miami case and some other cases, if you have your eyes on a severe result, perhaps to satisfy those screaming in that public relations type conversation. Remember with Penn State, it was, how can the NCAA sit idly by as a former Joe Paterno assistant coach was molesting children? What does that organization do if it can't stop and penalize something like that? Well, the NCAA enforcement staff looked at that case and said, hey, boss man, this is horrible, but typically matters of the criminal justice system are left for the criminal justice system. It's like not really what we do at the NCAA. It looks horrible, smells horrible, is horrible, did involve a former football coach, but this is not really a good fit for our rules. Mark Emmert, NCAA president, obviously with his eyes on public relations and with no regard for the actual bylaws and Constitution itself, said, screw it. We can't take this public relations beating. We can't look that toothless and incompetent. Figure out a way to hammer the Nittany Lions because it does smell that bad. So they did, and then they got sued, and they lost. UNC is arguing that this is another area where, despite the stench coming from Chapel Hill, it should be embarrassing to any university, much less a top five public university like UNC Chapel Hill. What happened should be embarrassing. There's no debating that, I don't think. But they're talking with their academic accrediting agency. They're dealing with clear NCAA issues. But they're saying, wait a minute, NCAA, just as you had never gotten involved in what was really a criminal justice matter with Penn State, tried to hammer them but got burned after being sued and losing, This smells to UNC like a case where the NCAA is venturing into unplowed, unprecedented territory. There are all sorts of examples of NCAA sanctions for various types of academic fraud or athletics misconduct. Remember in the UNC case, everybody handed in something. Everybody handed in something. And there's no precedent for the NCAA saying, your guys did so little in a pathetically laughable, unrigorous class, if there is such a word, that that's going to rise to the level of NCAA violations. And steering some of those athletes to those classes, again, everybody handed in something. This would be the first time the NCAA would say, well, that class was so easy, essentially, so easy, so pathetic looking, so bogus, so anomalous, pick your favorite word, that yes, in this case, it was so severe, it rises not just to the level of academic fraud the way the academic community defines that. It was embarrassing, ridiculous, no doubt about it. But the way the NCAA rules go, the Carolina case is a tricky fit for the bylaws that were in place at the time, just like the Penn State case proved to be a very bad fit for the NCAA rules in place at the time of the Sandusky disaster. Fascinating stuff, and Armageddon is possible, folks. Just remember, not only is there a new timeline, Carolina with 90 days to respond, NCAA with 60 days to respond after that, not only is that new timeline going to push it way into the future, if the NCAA chooses to try to make an example of Carolina in this academic context that has been previously unchartered, well, Carolina is very likely to come up with all these procedural arguments, and this never happened before, just like Penn State did when the Nittany Lions won a lot of their lawsuits and pushbacks to the NCAA after they received sanctions in an unprecedented way. It is truly one for the history books, folks, and what might have been a story that went away more quietly doesn't look like it's going to be that at all. ABC fans celebrating a Christmas miracle today. Carolina fans having that bah humbug feeling after seeing the revised notice of allegations.
Never miss an episode of The David Glenn Show. Search David Glenn Show on iTunes and subscribe now.